Right, welcome back to Sheep Fan. We've got another podcast continuing the chats we have with people, and we like that relaxed chat. And today we've got someone from the States, Carolyn Adams, who's got in touch with us. And she got two books, one that was out a few years ago, and one I think has just come out, if I'm right there. She'll correct me, no doubt, if I've got that wrong. So joining me and Chris tonight is Carla, and welcome, Carla.
Hi, thank you so much. Hi.
If you don't understand our accents, I apologise now, because we tend to talk quick when we get carried away. And also, sometimes our sense of humour when we spoke to people in the States does go over the head as well. So
that could happen to me.
Yeah. And it probably happens on the way back as well. So I apologise now.
Rural accents. Dom's got a very strong Northern accent. I've got like a pure Queen's English accent.
Yeah. That's because he lives in Cambridge now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He lives in Cambridge. He might as well live at Buckingham Palace. But we've actually got family in the States, although it's quite away from yourself in Kansas. Our crew were from Chicago.
Okay.
So we're actually part American.
Well, neat.
Yeah.
25% American. Yeah,
yeah, 25% American.
Oh, very cool.
Our grandfather came over to England during World War II as one of the black regiments.
Right.
Met my grandma at some sort of soiree, some dance, and the rest is history, so we say. So, yeah, we caught up with a few of them, haven't we, Chris, over the years. It's quite interesting.
Not so much now, because one of them passed away.
Yeah, the guy that was contacting us, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not really in touch with him as much now. I wish I were, to be fair.
I look like a clone of him, yeah, which would be odd. None of my family over here do I look like, and I look like a clone of him. it was strange. But anyway, there you go. Blast from the past.
So
where can people contact you? I always forget this, and Chris always tells me off. So before we start, let's get where people can contact you if they're interested in buying your books and things.
The best place is through my website, ancestralriver.com. There's just a contact page where you can send me your questions or such. And I don't sell my books from the website. I just have one book, and it's the one that just came out. And let's see. So you can send me a contact there if you have questions or whatever. There's also a link there, so you can go directly from there to the Amazon page.
Cool. Right. Well, we'll start. I asked a question before we start, just to get his mind ticking. The bullet points that you've listed down here that you do, there's a lot of things that you actually do. And we were talking off air about natural health and healing and all this stuff. What would you describe yourself as? If I came to you as a client, what would you say? I know it's a difficult one, but.
Well, I'm
sorry to
just
put you on the spot.
No, that's fine. I'm just a person who loves the universal spirit, right? What people might call God or others. And I like to explore, and I love learning, right? And so I like to be close to nature. And so I go where my heart desires, right? Whatever I'm real curious on at the time, then I explore. And so I had gotten into tuning forks. And mainly that was for self-healing, because I had so many old emotional patterns that weren't helpful at all. And I'd kind of hit bottom. And I came across the biofield tuning, which was developed by Eileen Day McCusick. And that was the start of this journey of healing as well as helping others and learning so much about the universe. It's changed my viewpoint on many things. And I'm sure I'll change my viewpoint many times else as we learn and grow, right?
Yeah, that's how it should be. A door shouldn't be closed behind you. It should be left open, because you might have to go back through it. And you might have to add that bit that you thought you'd unlearned back into your new information, and joining it up actually makes something
Isn't that the truth?
Yes.
And definitely. That's a whole nother conversation in itself. Absolutely. That's our journey, right?
It's nice to reach a point when you're happy to be wrong.
Absolutely.
Rather than stubborn and egotistical about it.
We found ourselves.
I call them the wet fish moment, where you just get slapped around the face with a wet fish. Just and you can't do nothing but realize that you were wrong.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I try to just say I experienced it this way. Really, that's why I wrote my book the way I did, because I wrote it as a personal experience of this journey in my life, right, of healing and things, because it's we help each other as we go, right?
Passing information on.
Obviously
there are parasitical forces out there that like to steal information and not give back. There's a lot of that going on, as we've seen in the wider world now. But there is a community building up around the world. I don't like using the word community, because I think that we're all alone, but we all work together as well at times. And we interact with each other for different reasons, like us meeting up now. We might not speak again for a year, and then we might meet up again and pass information around.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
I know it sounds good. A bit hippie-ish, but it's not necessarily hippie-ish. It's just that you're letting it come to you.
Well, and we really are all connected. You know, we're all made of light particles that flow in the light waves, and it's just our own body, our own life record that's close to us, the biofield, right? And then from that, it extends into the ancestral field and forever, really. And so we all integrate and overlap, and we're all part of the vast field of light particles and spirit between the particles, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a question for you, actually, Cal, because this is actually quite weird, because I just did this just now, right? A few weeks ago, I woke up and then this thing popped in my head, and it was telling me I had some kind of blockage, right? I didn't understand what it meant, and then it popped into my head to look into Reiki. I don't know what your thoughts on Reiki are. And I had it when I was younger, about 25 years ago. I've probably told this story before, but I had a back spasm. I work in kitchens as a chef, and I had a back spasm. And I was on the floor in pain, and a girl who worked there's mum did Reiki, and she got to come in, and she laid me down on this chair. She didn't touch me, and I was very skeptical, by the way. I didn't believe anything was going to happen, because I thought she was just a bit crackers, her mum. And she did the whole hand thing. It took about half an hour, and she just, you know, and I'm lying there thinking I'm not going to be able to get back up, and she did the whole Reiki thing, like put her hands over me, and then she touched my toes. And I felt this jolt go through my legs, and I could stand up again. It still hurt, but I was able to work, continue working. But it was just sore, but it worked. And it's always, I don't know, it just came back to me recently, just popped in my head to have it. And just as we were talking, I would just email this Reiki woman, just out, pure coincidence. But
it's not a coincidence.
Someone who's in Cambridge. But I woke up one morning, it just popped in my head. Reiki, you've got a blockage of some, I don't even know, I don't understand Reiki. So I bought a little book on Reiki, and I've just been reading about it. And then I just emailed this woman and said, I'd like to come for a session. I just wondered what your thoughts were on that. I just thought it was quite
it is. Well, and that's how the spirit works, how intuition works, how when you want to know, then you're shown what you need to know. Yeah. There's so many, many modalities of energy work that do wonderful things.
Yeah, there is.
I like the thought process behind the Reiki thing, though. You know, the actual, I was reading a little book about it. Only one of those little, not like an in-depth book or anything, but just the theory of it, that you're tapping into the universe. I just found it quite interesting.
They're basically reconnecting you, aren't they? I mean, all the frequency devices are doing is putting your body back in the right frequency, or your organs or whatever, back in, you know, whether they're using the Schumann resonance or back in the Earth's resonance, if you like. Because we're just not, by a centimeter at a time, out every day. We're out there in that toxic world, aren't we?
Tapping into your aura, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. And so, that's what I find in the field. You know, lots of times there's energy that doesn't belong to you and you need to get rid of it. And some of it is yours, but is really negative and it needs to be transmuted and made positive to come back and help you again.
Are they like attachments, would you say?
Some are. Yeah, some are. I've experienced some of my own as well as find them in clients or people I work on. It's some I'd call attachments. Not all. Others are perhaps not attached, but seem to be in your field anyway, attracted by your energy. So if you have negative energy, then negative energy becomes attracted to you. And they're at different levels of sentiency, I'd say. You know, some seem just charged particles, you know, and some seem almost human, and some definitely they have their choice of, like we all do, right? That's what the universe works on, free choice.
See, I'm starting to, not Ultima mindset, but we call it positive and negative energies, but I'm also thinking there's a type of energy. So it's not necessarily a positive or a negative charge, because sometimes negative people attract themselves to you if you're being positive as well. So it's sometimes a type of energy that we're giving off. And I'm not no expert in it, but it's something I've been thinking about, that the types of energy that we're giving off are attracting the wrong people, which I always had a problem with that. I know we're going to talk about hypnosis and things like that. But
it makes sense, though, because a negative would be attracted to a positive.
Yeah, but it could be, again, like blood types, different energies from each blood type, for argument's sake, could be a possibility. I'm using that as an example. I'm not saying that's correct. Mm.
But it could also be your subconscious. Mm. You know, it might be negative thought patterns running in your subconscious. Say, like a very common one with people with difficulties or problems of emotional problems of one kind or of another, or just everybody in general, really, is unworthiness or not feeling like you're enough. And those patterns can run in your own subconscious. So there might be things that you're not aware of that is sending out part of your vibration that other person is pulling in toward you for.
Yeah. So you could think you're being positive, but in reality, there's a charge coming out of you that's not actually positive.
Absolutely.
And it could be an Achilles heel, let's just say, for this negative attachment to come in, or a negative emotion or whatever it is.
Right. And I think the best way to
because we're going to pick up this energetic debris, aren't we, whether we like it or not?
Yeah. Yeah, we are. And the stuck energy of those patterns that causes those patterns within us and within our subconscious, you could call that debris also, right?
Yeah.
That's cluttering up our field that gets stuck in places, and you have to find it and get rid of it. But the best way to avoid the negative patterns of the subconscious, as well as avoid the stuck energy in your field, is to have the two hemispheres of your mind work in harmony. That's the only way you can hear your inner self, your spirit. And so the more that you can stay in that mindset, right, of working in harmony and listening to your spirit and then feeling where you feel, because you could probably feel then, it takes time to get used to and practice in learning, but you can tune into how you feel at different times, and you weren't aware that maybe you had those negative thoughts, but you can find where you feel contractions or pain or blocks in your body, and then you could put your mind there and work on clearing those just with intention to some degree. Others, there's many other things that helps so so effectively. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, intention is a big reason as to why we get ourselves in a load of problems, because it's been corrupted, hasn't it? We seem to be going in the, as we've seen unfold in the world at the moment, degrading our mental abilities. So our intentions are distorted. It's not reality anymore, is it? And that is a difficult part to get right for people.
It is, and it's been what I find, it's been millennia, right? So, like, I work not only specifically with ancestors or ancestral clearing, but that's what I guess has come to me as my thing to do. And patterns go back to millennia. Things I have learned from meditation and hypnosis and in my biofield, even, it's like definitely things have been happening this way for millennia, or started millennia ago and continually have gotten worse. And thankfully, it seems like in many ways, individual people, the number of individual people who are waking up is increasing. And that's wonderful.
Yeah. Because the opposite of the tyranny that we're going through is the fact that people are going to wake up. The people in charge know this as well. It's not necessarily something they can know about, they can't plan for, if you like, that by hitting someone, people are going to stick up for themselves. And that is the waking up, isn't it, really, I suppose.
Yeah, and I lost my train of thought there. So go ahead.
Sorry, we're going off on tangents here.
I listened to a little bit of your one of your podcasts today, Carl, about the ancestral trauma. Do you want to maybe explain that? Because it's
fascinating. It's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah,
I think so.
It is.
It just came to me one day. I had just learned tuning forks, and my grandfather, who had been dead for 25 years, just came. And for some reason, you know, I didn't see him with my eyes, but my eyes could see where he was and track where he was going. And it was like my body perceived his vibration and interpreted it in words that I could understand. And so he wanted to go to the oneness and needed my help. And so I had to ask him, well, how can I help? And it was like, well, use your tuning forks. Well, what do I do? Right. And so it was just kind of trial and error. But yes, I had found, so I had started by releasing stuck energy in of mine that would belong to my ancestors, and found that so many patterns that I had struggled with all my life they had struggled so greatly, and then it had passed down to me. Definitely. You find this because our own individual biofield is about 5 to 6 feet around us in 360 degree circle, and then 2 to 3 feet above and below us. And then beyond that is our ancestral field, which extends to about 35 feet away from your body. And their life record can be found in the ancestral field, just like our life record is in our individual field. And so with the tuning forks and intention, right, I would come through the ancestral field and my own, clearing the things in me that was also their patterns. And what I found was so tremendous, it definitely changes our own patterns, but it helps them. It helps them be able to be ready to go to the oneness if they're not there. And if they are in the oneness, or what people might call heaven, if they're there already, then it still helps them, because it's still in the loss of the stuck energy still increases their voltage there where they are, and thus the voltage of the universe.
It does make you wonder why everything's going electric, doesn't it?
I mean,
on a bigger picture, not just for control, 15-minute cities, etc. but everything is electric. That was invented, let's face it, 150 years ago, and we're apparently at the height of technology, and we've never invented anything better than electric. Apparently.
Yeah. Do you think then, Carla, just on what you were just saying, so say, for instance, the nut jobs that run this show, if they continue to trounce the populations of the world, for instance, they're building up, even dead or alive, they're building up this trauma, aren't they, and negativeness, even into even beyond death, I suppose. I've said this a few times, actually, of a nation, say, for instance, I won't say which nation, but working in kitchens, I work with lots of different, and there's certain nations... there's certain nations that you see certain traits in. For instance, I would say, for instance, like the English, the Spanish, and this is no disrespect to any English or Spanish, because I'm English and I like Spanish, and Italians, a lot of European people, they have like an air of...
arrogance.
You could say arrogance or, self-righteousness or whatever. And then you take some of the Eastern European countries that were trounced in the Second World War, and you can feel the trauma in the people, if you know what I mean. Even though they're lovely people, for instance, they could drink quite heavily or, they've got like quite defensive, but it's generational. It goes down the generation. Do you know what I mean? Am I explaining that right?
Yeah.
The patterns continue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you develop more of your own. Right.
Yeah.
And if they've been trouncing the whole world for generations, that buildup of people even in the netherworld, it's like a negative snowball, isn't it?
Oh, that's fine. But yes, what I have found through meditation and stuff is that, I don't know how soon, it appears to me when I work in the biofield of the universe, particularly, just the universe. So I'm not working in a person's life, right? But I can tune the universe as well. And it seems to be a pattern that usually I catch sadness and anger at a place that's, say, 1/4 to 1/3 the way through the history of the universe. So like if you started at the outer edge of where the oneness starts, because I find the oneness to be a biofield. And so if you start at the outer edge where that starts, and we're coming into its central channel of chakras, right? Like it has, just like we have, right? As below, so above. And about 1/4 of the way from the outer edge, walking toward the body, I find this really, really heavy. It's usually sadness. It's also anger. Sometimes others, grief is big. But it appears to me that at that point in history, whatever time it was, but it has to be millennia ago, that something huge happened that made the whole universe grieve.
Right.
Not just the people.
Like some cataclysm.
Yes. Uh-huh. It could have been, I don't know what, but what as part of that, what I have been shown is that there used to be these really giant trees that were different than the trees we have now. And they were huge. And they would pull up the frequencies of crystals that were in the earth and then send those vibrations out through their leaves. And it would act as a daily biofield tuning, if you would, or a daily Reiki session, right? Mm-hmm. For anyone that knew about it and wanted it. All they had to do was kind of
tune in.
That's right. And it kind of, in a way, kept those old patterns and things we don't like, right? The old emotion and thought patterns to a minimum, because it could be reset every day, basically. But those, at that point of that 1/4 to 1/3 into the lifespan of the universe was when those were cut down. And then after that, even before that, knowledge had begun to be occulted and lost, right? So fewer and fewer people tuned in. And then the trees that were these giant Tesla towers were cut down. And so you could not recharge that way. And so it kind of was pushing the snowball down the hill, right? Down there, kind of.
That sounds absolutely bonkers, but it actually makes sense.
It makes sense to me.
So do you think that human sadness is because we distantly remember this utopia and this different world? Because we are sad creatures. I wake up some days and the world's fantastic, and other days you're like, oh God, you know, like you do. But it's almost like we know there was something else somewhere instantly. There is something else, yeah.
Or whatever.
Or we've been taken away from when there was something else and everyone was connected and everything was fantastic.
Well, let's face it, humans as we are now don't belong here. We don't fit in.
Well, no, well, we don't belong here permanently. We're spirit beings and we belong in the oneness and we come from there and still are part of it. It's just that our minds forget we are, right? And we have to live concentrating so much more on the physical than the spiritual. And then we go back, right? When the physical dies. So we're just made to be here for a short while.
Yeah. Well, the big thing for whatever the controllers on this realm are trying to do is constantly steer us away from even thinking there might be something else. Because that's the biggest question anybody should be asking as a human, why the hell are we here? Are we here? Mm. Who are we? Where did we come from? You know, and everything we're told is a blatant lie. It's just a blatant lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to Chris's question there on the, if we carry that universal sadness or whatever. And yes, I believe we do. And there's a place in the biofield anatomy that's about under the left armpit that is world despair. And sometimes I have picked up specifically despair from that point in time.
That's weird. I do a lot of training, weights, and I've got a pain here. Not now, but I have for the last two or three weeks. How weird is that?
Interesting.
That's my left armpit.
Yeah. the second time around with this worldwide sickness, right, comes in, it might be because it's related to your heart, right? It's close to your heart.
Yeah, yeah.
And you might be feeling it more. Absolutely.
Mm. Mm. It's all very interesting stuff, isn't it? Fascinates me.
When you spoke about those giant trees, I've looked at this. We've talked about this.
We spoke about this, yeah.
Ayers Rock, for instance, in the middle of Australia. Looks like a tree.
The Aborigines used to, it was their
sacred still, isn't it?
Sacred, yeah, ground.
Before they got wiped out by everybody. But it looks like a tree stump, doesn't it? It's petrified tree stump.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do, they're all over the world, too.
You know what it reminds me of, Carla? Avatar, you know the film Avatar?
Yeah,
that whole film was about cutting a tree down, a giant tree that actually energized the whole world where they were.
Yeah. Well, whole forests are joined together, aren't they, by fungi under the earth?
Well, yes, and that I'm just going to take that because that's what I'm working on right now, because the trees are connected under the earth. And because just like the giant trees, but on a much limited extent, they pull up the vibrations from the spirit that comes from way under the earth, and they broadcast it out into the sky through their leaves. And if we hold a tree, right, and put our intentions into connecting with that tree energy and sending our intentions that everyone in the world would know their oneness with universal spirit, then the trees can send those intentions across the world for us. And of course, it starts right where you're at. So the more people that do it, spread it around the earth. And that's what I have been trying to organize this week so that every equinox some of us can join together wherever we are over the earth and send our intentions at a time when astrological energy is high also and working with us. And I just think the world needs it. And
No doubt it needs it, Carla.
Yeah.
No doubt.
And it would explain why the word tree hugger is a negative.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
You said that, yeah. Like, it was used as a, almost like a, to ridicule people. Oh, he's a tree hugger.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. And even say, like, you know, there is a hug a tree week or hug a tree day in May, right? And, but it's mainly to, in gratitude, which of course we should, I mean, we do feel gratitude, right? And, and things. But this, I wanted this to be a spiritual thing because we're spirit beings and because the whole of the universe is a spirit being, that these intentions are for our own spirit's desire, are the highest intention that each of our spirits hold is that we fully know our oneness with the whole. And so that's particularly what I wanted the intentions during, I call it Friend a Tree Week, to say. And then, but by all means, to share your own personal intentions for your life or what you hold for the world too.
Well, how many times do we now do, like, walking on a beach in bare feet, for argument's sake, or laying on, in a summer's day, laying on the grass? You know, it used to do that type of thing, especially the latter one, because we don't live near the sea, a lot when you were a child. But like, you're recharging, and you see dogs rolling around in the grass, and other animals rolling around to connect with the earth. We never do that. Nobody ever.
I remember lying there as a kid. You could and smelling the, you know, just yeah, lying exactly, there smelling yeah, earth
yeah.
and grass.
Yeah, you could smell it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I did too. I'd spread out my little blanket and lay down there, and it was so nice. And then I'd get up, and earthworms had all come up.
Yeah.
You know, well, under my
unfortunately
body.
Unfortunately for me, stuff. I was usually pinned down face first by a dog.
Oh. Yeah,
I never did anything like that. One strange thing was that we went to watch my youngest play football, I think it was. And me and my wife were talking to some people on the sidelines. And I said, look down at your feet. And I looked down at his feet. And there must have been about 30 earthworms around us that had just come to the surface. It freaked my wife out. This was only like about 6 months ago, Chris.
Wasn't that strange moon day, something like that?
Yeah, it was strange moon day, yeah. But they were only around me and Nick. They weren't around anybody else, which I found a bit odd. Yeah, it would honestly odd.
I bet you were telling me about your health equipment, right?
Yeah. The red light bed and stuff like that, yeah.
Your vibration must be higher.
Maybe.
You know,
maybe.
They would have responded to that. I bet it drew them up. That's
quite possible.
Really cool.
It's never happened before. And it were a bit freaky to see, but now you see it, you think about it. Yeah. where do you want to go now? I mean, we've got a lot of these. I don't think we spoke about any of these, Adler. And we've talked about tree energy there a lot. And we spoke about, I was talking to somebody the other day about energy and water. Energy, everything we do has been constructed to not be what the natural source is anymore, whether it's water, air, whatever, food, everything we do in our lives, isn't it? So how do we get back to that, back to zero, if you like? It's like having a book that's been bent over and you've got to straighten it back out again and get it back in place.
Oh, wow. That's a big question.
Yeah, I know it is. I'm not saying you've got the answer, by the way.
No pressure, Carol.
Right.
Pressure. Tell me how we do it. No.
Well, I think it all goes back. It has to be an individual. You know, we're sentient beings. We each have the choice. And it has to be our individually choosing to live as those spirit beings we are, to listen to our spirit, to recognize the point where the two sides of your brain are starting to be in disharmony, if that's the word, right?
Dis-ease.
Unharmony, dis-ease, yeah. So that they're not talking or working in harmony together, because that's what begins to send you in the fight or flight, right? Or freeze. And so if you can keep your attention on that, on listening to your spirit, that's where it has to start, I think, on an individual basis.
You could translate that, and this is not me saying this, I've heard other people saying this, you could translate that as your heart and your brain, couldn't you? Whereas if you follow your heart and your instinct, it usually works out all right. When your brain kicks in and starts saying, no, you can't do that. No, you want to do this. You want to do that. You know what I mean?
But it's only because your brain is not working in harmony.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, because it's not the brain itself. I mean, we have to have our brain, right? We need our brain.
Yeah.
And
it's not translating the information properly.
And then
when you're using the negative side of your brain, you start to take it down a negative path. I can't do it. When your heart's telling you, you can do it. Of course you can. It'll be fantastic. But your brain kicks in and starts going, no.
Right. Going down those old patterns.
Yeah.
Those old patterns. Yeah.
So I'm going to pick one of these points at random because they're all fantastic points and I don't want to miss any of them. The five things ancestors need to transition into oneness.
Thank you. Thank you so much for picking that. It stems off, we were just talking a little bit ago about our spirit's primary intention of knowing our oneness with the whole or with the universal spirit. And so these five things that I have found that ancestors need to transition are part of, it's like that one main intention have five intentions, and they're all, each of those five aspects are based in our spiritual chakras. Like we have, most people are aware that in our central energy channel that runs through our body, we have seven main primary chakras that go from like your tailbone to the top of your head, right? But then we have others that are in the biofield. And so they're called spiritual chakras. And so each of those five things ancestors need are based on those. And I want to say that from my experience, both in doing the tunings as well as in meditation and hypnosis, the most people, when they die, go to what I call a waiting place because they don't have all of these five things. And what I find, though, at the point of death, you only need two of those things. So if you only have two of those things, you could go right to the oneness at death. But if you don't have those two things when you die, you have to have five. I don't know why, but that's what I find. And so these five things are based on our spiritual chakras. And so the first one, the most important one, would be based on the spiritual chakra that's about a foot and a half to 2 feet below our feet. And it's about knowing who we are, knowing that we're spirit beings and that our spirit is meant to lead our mind. And how this applies to the afterlife, a lot of people don't know their spirit, right? Especially over the last millennia, right? You don't know your spirit. So, and you don't know what the world is, or what it's like, and religion hasn't really helped our perspective too much on that in many ways. And so when they die, then they have to learn. And I think they have to learn their spirit, of course. They have to learn how the afterlife works. They have to learn what the oneness or universal spirit is, you know, what is the real setup of the world, just kind of the basics they have to know. And there's also some other little things they have to learn, like if they're wanting to transition and they're ready to transition, they need to have the help of a bloodline descendant, and a direct descendant, like a child or grandchild or on through millennia, grandchild. And it's their, that person in the waiting place, it's their responsibility to somehow get that living descendant, find which one is going to be most receptive to helping them, and try to steer that person in a way that will eventually connect with them being able to be helped and go to the oneness, right? And like my grandfather came to me, right? Because he had seen in the afterlife, because all the thoughts of everything flow through the universe. And so they hear these if they want to tap into those or if they know how to tap into them. And the learning thing, it depends on the type of person they were. Like if you're a person that loved learning and were really knew how to learn, right? Because so often in school, you're not taught to learn, you're taught to regurgitate, right? And so if you don't know how to learn, it's going to take those people a lot longer to stay in the waiting place than if you knew how to learn and then you're doing what you can to listen and find what you need. Then the other thing, the next thing they would need is kind of like at that point I talked about where if you can feel the point in time, which is really every second, every minute that we're in, you have a conscious choice if you're going to listen to your spirit or if you're going to let your mind kind of be in dis-ease, right? Be in out of harmony. And so what goes with that is you have to have the desire to hear your spirit. And so that's one of the five things. They have to desire to be part of the oneness. And then a third thing, that chakra for that desire is about 18 inches to 2 foot above the top of your head. And then above that, so about 3 to 4 feet above your head is another spiritual chakra that is about conscious choice. And so even you know your spirit and then you learn to live from spirit, but because we're sentient beings and because the universe and universal spirit work on this free choice, this sentiency, then we have to consciously choose if we want to and when we're wanting to rejoin the oneness. And then the fourth thing is a lot of ancestors have stuck energy so that they're still held on by world despair or by their own loss and sorrow or their own old patterns of any kind they would have. They're held here by some of those and it has to be released enough. So what it seems to me, the point of needing that released is to increase their voltage enough because those in the grayscale are like, they're gray, right? Like a flashlight battery about to die. It's like, it's so dim and just kind of grayscale. And everything, the knowledge is power, right? So learning things increases their power. Recognizing that their spirit and having that desire to go to the oneness really increases their voltage. Making that conscious choice is a voltage. And then sometimes there's that stuck energy that has to be released that again is to raise their voltage enough. And sometimes it's their own voltage, the old emotions that hold them back. Sometimes it's a relative, right? Or a friend perhaps who's grief for that person's dying or worry about that person's spiritual life even, right, might be what's holding them back. And then the fifth thing that I found that they need, then they need us. And again, it comes down to voltage because that's why I believe the blood descendant also, so that can help with the stuck energy because it's also stuck in the present day, right, of the not just the ancestral field, but their pattern is stuck in the current day person too. But it's they need that a blood tie somehow is a higher voltage is what it seems to me. So that's why. Now, if they don't have living descendants, someone had died without children or their children had died or they didn't have an adopted child, then then they can transition to the oneness through a friend or another family member that, again, is willing to help and can help them work through, gain that voltage they need to transition.
Sorry, Chris, I knew you wanted to, I was staying out of it there because I knew I could see your mouth moving before you started talking.
No, the most very interesting stuff that, Cal, but at the beginning you were saying about the first one, rooted into the ground, the spiritual. So I suppose realization, acceptance that there is a spirit life, I suppose, basically. And how far away from that have we gone? I mean, if you even say to anyone these days, what's the meaning of life? Like, what are you talking about, you nutter? You know what I mean? You can't even have that conversation anymore. And I think even religion, as thwarted as a lot of that is, we've been taken away. We don't even have religion anymore, do we? Which was at least, I mean, I'm not...
Look at all the indigenous people, Chris.
I'm not exactly.
Aborigines, Maoris, Indians... South Americans, Africans.
All in tune with the earth, all in tune with their ancestors.
Exactly.
All discussing their ancestors, keep the ancestors alive.
What did the church do?
That could tap into your energy of, they actually need more, the ancestors need energy. Hmm. And the energy comes from them remembering them and discussing them. And, you know, because that's in every culture, isn't it?
Everyone.
Ancestor thing. Yeah. You know,
Eskimos, yes. From Eskimos.
Eskimos, to, Indians. Yeah. Aborigines, everybody, they all talk about that, and that's been trounced, hasn't it, but even in religion, there's some truth, at least, that there is something after. I think most people now think there's nothing. They're just, everyone's an atheist, aren't they? But even atheist has been hijacked, hasn't it? You can't be anything without having to be part of some group. But instinctively, I'm sure us three know that there's a spirit world and a spirit life and an existence beyond what
there has to be. Anybody
you have that discussion with most people these days, and they'll just think you're talking crazy talk.
Yeah, but also, if you have a discussion with anybody about not wearing a mask, they'll think you're crazy talk.
But what's almost just as bad, though, is there's many people that think that when someone dies, they're immediately in heaven or the oneness. And
You burn in hell or you go to heaven in constant ecstasy.
And it's simply it's not what I find anyway.
The bloodline thing is also interesting because, I mean, the obsession, I'm sure Dom will agree, with bloodlines, with the people who run the shit show, their obsession with bloodlines taps into exactly what you were just saying.
Yeah, well,
yes, it does.
I'm big on that. I like genealogy. So I do a lot of research into people, especially the people who are running the show. Their genealogy. We're just doing one on Orwell now.
What you've said there, Carl, would tap into the obvious obsession that in history that everyone's had with bloodlines and, you know, kings and queens, bloodlines and intermarriaging and all that stuff. It's almost like
we've just recorded something last week and it showed that out of the last five or six prime ministers, all of them had a royal bloodline that you could trace back very easily. So it does mean something to these freaks. And also whacking out our frequency, our balance, means something as well. So maybe it's the connection to the ancestors, maybe it's the help to the ancestors, whatever it might be. They're trying to lock us in this paradigm for some reason, electronically, which is probably why we're surrounded by Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi, electric wiring, etc. It just to knock us out. Of our
going from equilibrium. The biological Tesla tower, as you said, Carla, to
right
actually demonic evil Tesla towers.
Yeah,
go on, sir. But I was ranting,
but sorry, go on, Carla.
Well, I wasn't really.
You want me to say anything?
Okay. I was going to say
it's all right because we do go off on a few tangents. I apologize. Tuning forks. Is that the equipment that you use?
Obviously. I use.
Or do you use other things as well?
Well, yes, yes, and yes. I use primarily tuning forks.
Because the reason I asked that is because in the notes you mentioned hypnosis.
I don't use hypnosis. It depends on what you're talking about. Like when I do my work or helping with the ancestral clearing or helping clients free their own stuck energy to improve your emotional and thought patterns in your life and stuff. I usually use tuning forks. Sometimes I'm drawn to things of other vibrations, like I have a maraca and a tambourine and things. And sometimes that's what the spirit, it's like intuition says, grab that. You're going to need it right now. And so there's that. And sometimes the energy that needs to be cleared is so powerful, so strong right where it's at that I see it and see exactly where you need to work. And you don't need that. You could still use tuning forks to clear it, but you wouldn't need, say, a pendulum or something to find where to work. And then the other thing is sometimes energy is so tender and raw that I use my hands.
Right.
Instead of forks.
Is that similar to Reiki?
I assume so. I do not know a lot about Reiki. I've not had a session myself, and which sounds bad. I would love to. I just haven't got around to it. I've had so much of my own things to do.
When you mentioned instruments, Carla, what I thought was, isn't it funny that no instruments have been invented probably in our lifetime other than electronic instruments? There's no new version of a tambourine. There's no new violin. Do you know what I mean?
There's no new thing, is there?
No. Yeah. Piano's been around forever. All the instruments we've got, all the woodwind instruments, all the string instruments have all been around forever.
Violins, they've all been around.
Nothing new has...
And not only that, Chris, they can't make them as good or anything better designed than they were hundreds of years ago.
I know. What's that about? I mean, when you were talking about a tambourine, is that a resonance that we can't invent now? We just can't do it without an electronic keyboard, I suppose.
I don't know. And sometimes I use the, I use a hologram, so to speak, that I do the work by distance, and I have crystals on, different types of crystals on every chakra. And a lot of times it takes the energy from the crystals to help the stuck energy clear. So it's not just tuning forks, but it's tuning forks going through specific crystals too. So there's all sorts of ways that can clear the energy.
In one of your bullet points, you mentioned inner healing from fear and sadness. I think it's the second one down. Do you want to take us through that?
Of what caused it or my journey of healing?
Well, if you want to talk about your journey or just in general, it's up to you.
In general. Yeah. Well, in many ways we have already, you know, some of it's ancestral, definitely, where it happens, the stuck energy happens when we hold on to emotions. Like all our emotions are good. It's like biofeedback to our body, right? It's telling you, well, how you feel about things, you better check it out. And, you know, it's to keep you connected to your spirit so that you can work in harmony. And so they're good, but we get then in, we're kind of trained one way or another to think of different things as good or different emotions as bad, right? And so when you hold on to those emotions, and even if you're not trained, some of them don't feel as good, right? Or it comes, that emotion of sadness came when someone you love died. And so, yeah, it doesn't feel good, right? And so when you hang on to the sadness or hang on to whatever emotion or it is, then that's what's causes our natural flow of light particles and the light waves to become stuck. And then that little pockets of stuck energy that happen get stuck in time, right where we're at that age, then those block our natural flow. And so the energy has to make detours. And part of the detours then is developing those old thought patterns that aren't helpful anymore. And some of those are learned from our parents or people around us, and some are inherited. But it's just detours around those blocks in our natural flow. And
so what got you into what you're doing now? What took you down this road? It was one thing majorly that happened to you, or was there several things? Because we've all probably got our own stories as to why us, why are we? Because let's face it, it's not career enhancing, is it?
No, that's true. And that's what it was. It was career for me that was a couple things. The a job that I was fired from and or allowed to quit, right? Mm. And the death of my father occurred close to the same time frame. And so I did my best to push on and ignore those feelings or push them to the back and think I was through them or whatever. And then what, 5, 6 years later, something like that, it was like my husband and I were homesteading off grid. We were just starting from scratch in the middle of nowhere with very little funds available according to what you would need to do something really nice.
Was this in Kansas as well?
No, we were in Oklahoma at the time. And so still in the Midwest. And so it was just hard. And then my father-in-law had died. And while I didn't grieve him specifically greatly, because I hadn't, my husband and I had, it was second marriages for us. And so I hadn't been, it wasn't like I had known him my whole life and things. And so even though I grieved him, it wasn't as deep as, say, grieving my own father. And he had died. And then that's what kicked in, I think, all the other, because then I realized I hadn't grieved my own dad because I was trying to push through everything and keep life together. And so I couldn't do the hard, the real physically hard, lonely, off-grid existence that we had. And I said, I have to move. Yeah, I have to go somewhere. And so, thankfully, my husband said, well, I'll move anywhere you think you'll be happy. And so we did. And we came to this house that I'm in now. And shortly after that, I got my tuning forks and started working. Right after I was back from the tuning fork class that I took, then, because I love universal spirit or God, and I always have, I feel like. And I was trying to figure out, like you said, the purpose of life type of thing. It was like, you know, all some of those teachings just, like, what is the apple tree, right? What is sin? What is this? And it dawned on me, I was studying how our formative minds work when we're young kids and how you believe everything you're told. And whether they're true or not, because really that's a lot how our minds work. These programs are established when we're very little, when we're receiving and accepting what people tell us and don't have any truth to compare it to. And so you believe it and you grow up that way. And so it dawned on me, oh, that's what happened to Eve. If she was a real person, right, or whoever it was she was representing, that's what happened. She believed lies. She believed that the universe was not a loving, sentient, free choice abundance, right? She believed there was lack. She believed lies, whoever it was, right? Or whatever it stood for, right?
So that means there must have been someone lying to her. Or something, or essence, or whatever, lying to her.
Yes.
So there was something more than just two people.
It could have been, yeah. It could have been. Of course, the Bible story there is, right? The serpent. But, yeah, I can't say I know how everything works, but that dawned on me. So I turned to the universe, and I'd said, well, you know, I don't know how this works, but Eve, if you're someone and you're out there, you know, I want you to know, I know, and it wasn't your fault, right? Just like my old stuff that I was dealing with was not my fault. And That started my journey because people from the oneness, I started seeing bright orbs of light all around me.
Tune in next time. See you later. Bye.
Bye.
Be